Podcasting from baseball heaven, St. Louis, Missouri, home to float trips, gooey butter cake, and the Gateway Arch. This is the Navigate the Rapids podcast, where you find out how to effectively run and market your business. And now, here's your host, Will Hanke.
Welcome to the Navigate the Rapids broadcast, your weekly online marketing help broadcast for business owners. The whole point of Navigate the Rapids is to help business owners with all of their online marketing, no matter what it may be. Each week we have different guests, and this week we're going to be talking about marketing in a broad sense and dig a little deeper into it, but there's going to be some great tips. My name is Will Hanke, by the way, owner of Red Canoe Media, and I really thank you for joining us today. Today's October 10th, 2014, and my guest today is Steve Smart. He's a marketing consultant who's passionate about helping business owners and organizational leaders succeed. He says he's an introvert, but he has addressed audiences from 15 to 15,000 and has been seen on YouTube over 1 million times. He claims to be a homebody, but is no stranger to foreign places. He rolled off the assembly line in Detroit. That's kind of cool. Grew up in St. Louis, and his travels have taken him to places as far as the slums of Haiti, the mountains of Peru, and the headhunters of the Philippines. We'll have to talk about that for sure. He's honestly not sure which is more interesting, his chance encounter with Meg Ryan or the lady that had four thumbs. Four thumbs. Okay.
Yeah.
Please welcome Steve Smart, the marketing guy.
Will, all of that is true. I really did meet a lady with four thumbs one time in the Philippines.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah. You know, and I don't want to get too far off into that, but I'd never seen anything quite like that before. You know, she had, with each thumb, she had one that kind of split off about halfway up. And so there was, you know, kind of a second thumb, and each had its own, you know, thumbnail. So that was kind of odd.
Well, I guess if you worked it right, you could get your typing done really quick.
we were in a place where I doubt that she had access to a keyboard of any kind.
Right. Yeah. So tell me about after you got back from doing all that, and how you started with your current marketing career.
Well, it was a few years after I got back from I worked for a friend in a financial services company, very specialized, and I ran the office for him. He was actually in another city, and I ran the office for him and helped the company grow until we sold to a competitor. I became unnecessary, and
oh wow,
yeah. You know how some of those things go. So, you know, I thought, where am I going to go from here? And without getting into the whole story, you know, I realized that I really did have an ongoing passion for things that relate to communications and promotions, and some of it was website oriented stuff, and you know, it really all fell under the umbrella of marketing. So in my professional work and in my volunteer work, I consistently saw that I was a very good help to organizational leaders. And I have the ability to help them think on the big picture level, but then execute on a detail level. And not a lot of people can work at that executive level and then see to it the details are carried out very well. So I just hung out my shingle and started working.
Very good. That's great. So I know that you have talked about yourself in the past as kind of a marketing generalist.
Yes.
And I can only assume that there are a lot of business owners who know that they have to do marketing, don't know how, don't know where to start, or they hear something from a friend. But you kind of help business owners in that way, that you kind of start to culminate all the different things and help them start to execute a plan, I guess.
That's right. The way I like to put it like this, I help people pull the puzzle pieces together and see to it that they fit properly. And, you know, after I hung out my shingle and started doing more work in the area of marketing, you know, I looked around like there is marketing is such an enormous world. There are so many things out there, and I began to think, you know, as I'm working as an advocate for my clients, I'm thinking, how do you make sense out of all this? So you've got different people who are selling different services, providing different services and doing a good job of it. But how do you make sense out of all of it, and how do you figure out how all the pieces fit together? And so I started a quest to answer those questions for myself. And that's what I like to do with small business owners, is help them with principles and tools to make sense out of all this and make better decisions and, you know, kill their chaos, so to speak.
Right. Yeah, and we've talked about that in the past. What do you actually mean by kind of killing the marketing chaos?
Well, chaos shows up in a lot of different places in life and business. It can show up in simple ways in operations. For example, you know, you may not know this, but I worked in a machine shop after I graduated high school. So I remember, so I'll take a little side journey just to make this a little bit. Do you remember the swing away can openers?
No.
It was a brand of can opener that was made here in St. Louis. And one of the machines that I ran made those can opener cutters. It's just that little sharp lid, that sharp thing that cuts the lid off the can.
Yeah.
I ran a machine that made thousands of those every day. Well, when I started running it was just, you know, I just load the machine with new material. I don't really check anything. I just load all these different machines with new material. So one of the guys that was supervising me thought that he had told the other guy that was supervising me that I was supposed to check the dimensions of the parts. Well, nobody told me to do that. So we had a whole run of, I don't know, 3,000 or 4,000 of these parts with the whole dimension that was off. And and so that was one example of chaos and where it can show up in operations. And the way that it shows up is when somebody starts checking something against a defined standard.
Right. If there is such a thing.
If there is a defined standard. And in a lot of things, there is a defined standard. So we had what we called a plug gauge. So it was just a piece of, it had, you know, thing on one end, thing on the other end. And if you put one end in the hole and if it doesn't go in, then, okay, the hole isn't too big. And if this end doesn't go in, well, then the hole is too small. So you have a defined standard against which you're measuring things. You go, okay, we've got a problem. We can fix this. However, when it comes to marketing, there isn't really a physical defined standard to tell you when you're on the right track and when you're not on the right track.
Right, now, definitely.
It can show up in your leads, but that's after you've run your parts, so to speak. That's after you've spent your money. That's after you've made your plans. So I began to think about, all right, so how do I build a framework to help people, for example, make good decisions about their marketing efforts? You know, people just, you probably know as well as I do, people like to shoot from the hip in small business.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, and like I said earlier, they may have heard of this way that works well for one of their friends or at a chamber meeting or something. And they think, oh, man, we better start doing that. But they don't educate themselves. They just shoot from the hip and try it.
That's right. That's right. And when you think about shooting from the hip, you know, you see the guy on TV, the cowboy, you know, out in the Wild West, and he's got 6 beer bottles lined up on a board out there in the field somewhere, and he, you know, pulls his gun from his holster and bam, 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 bam. You know, he shoots all those beer bottles. Who can do that? Nobody can do that. You can't do that.
Right.
You know, I mean, and you think about snipers, you know, trained snipers, you know, they line up their shot, they aim. And so So yeah, I think you're right about people and the way that they make their decisions about marketing tactics.
Definitely. You know, and there's a phrase that I've referenced in the past. I think it was by a guy named John Wanamaker, who says, you know, half the money I spend on advertising is wasted. I just don't know which half.
Yeah. And I, you know, some of this stuff is kind of fuzzy in marketing. And I understand that, but I do believe that there are ways, and I feel like I've developed some ways to help people think through these things and make better decisions.
Yep. So that was my next question. How can you start to sort through the chaos?
Well, yeah. So I have different tools that I use. One of them is Business DNA, and we may or may not talk about that very much today. You know, we talked about this earlier. I don't like to overwhelm people with too much information.
Sure.
I'd rather give people something that they can walk away with and use, even if that makes our session shorter.
Right.
So let's make that our objective, is that people can walk away with something that they can use. So Business DNA is one of the tools that I've developed. Another one is called the Dave's Marketing Matrix. That's not named after a guy. It's just an acronym.
Right. Okay.
So in all simplicity, here's how I normally describe it. People sometimes ask me, you know, what's the hot thing? What's the thing that I got to be doing in marketing? What's the thing that's going to put my business, take my business to the next level? What's the hot thing? And I like to respond by saying, well, I don't think that's a good first question. I think a better first question is, how can I make sure that I'm covering my bases? And what are the different things that I need to be doing? Let's kind of step back. And so when somebody says, what's the one thing? I don't think that's a good question. Part of it, that violates one of my core guiding principles, and that is, you know, there is no magic pill. There's no single tactic. There's no group of tactics that will universally work for all businesses all the time.
Absolutely.
So I think the better question is, well, what are the different bases that I need to cover? So I divide it up like this. I came up with that Dave's Marketing Matrix. And how I came up with that, I have no idea. I think it just occurred to me one day.
Nice.
So I'll walk you through that acronym, and then we can discuss each one separately. So
okay.
D stands for discovery. A stands for awareness. V stands for validation. E stands for engagement. And S stands for satisfaction. So if you like, I can go through those one by one.
Absolutely, yeah. Let's start with the D.
Okay. D, discovery. So, you know, it's not rocket science that one way or another you have to find ways to help people find out about you for the first time.
Right.
But it's not just finding out about you. It's also being relevant when people find out about you. So people have to know pretty quickly why you matter and what makes you different and better and more attractive than your competitor. Did you have a comment about that?
Yeah, no, I agree. Back when SEO was in its very infancy, you know, you could keyword stuff pretty much any words into your website and start to rank for them. And, you know, we would put things like Spears or something like that. And, you know, we could get a lot of traffic from that, but it wasn't relevant. So,
mm-hmm.
So what's the point? I mean, it was fun to do, but there was no point behind it. So, you know, getting the traffic that matters is definitely important.
Exactly. And whether it's web traffic or phone traffic or, I mean, however it is that you do business, if I am a car dealer who handles a brand that several other people around town handle, well, what is it that's going to make me different, better, and more attractive? And to go down kind of another trail related to this, if you compete on price, then you're probably just going to have thinner margins.
Right.
And, you know, is that what you want? If you compete on value, then you're in better shape. And so if you can figure out what makes you different, better, and more attractive, and what promises you can make and consistently deliver and satisfy people with, well, then you've got something. So it's not just about people finding out about you for the first time, but it's also why you matter and being able to communicate that well.
Right.
So, you know, of course, there's tons of ways under the sun that you can see to it that people discover you for the first time. You talked about SEO. So there's a lot of different ways you can make that happen, but that is a base that you have to cover, and you have to devote some of your marketing resources in that direction. So then there's the A, awareness. Depending on the products that you have, people, when they find out about you, they are not necessarily ready to hit the buy button right away. Especially in a long cycle, long sales cycle, what's called a high involvement purchase, where a high involvement purchase is one that requires more thought, more consideration, usually is a higher ticket item. So if you compare, say, a candy, you know, with a candy bar, you know, that's not a purchase you have to think about. Although my wife tells me I should think more about my candy bar purchases. Yeah, that's a different story. So, you know, with a candy bar is not a high involvement purchase. Maybe a big screen TV is an example of a high involvement purchase. So you could make a long list of high involvement purchases. So somebody finds out about you, well, how do you build and maintain awareness? So if they're not ready to hit the buy button, then you have to cover another base, and that base is building and maintaining awareness. So somebody finds out about you for the first time, if you don't build and maintain awareness, they're going to forget about you.
Yes.
So that's the A.
Okay. And some ways of doing that would include a newsletter, for instance.
That's the example I like to give, yeah.
Just something that just keeps you in front of them on a regular basis, has some good content, so it's not just an ad. Mm-hmm. You know, it's actually solves some things that maybe they didn't know they should solve, or it addresses a specific part of their industry or something like that.
That's right. And I also like to say this, that with the awareness, you build and maintain awareness, and you also can tell the rest of your story.
That's true, yeah.
So
even in little bits, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So people can say, okay, well, they make widgets. Okay, they're a widget maker. But maybe there's a lot more to it than that. Maybe it's how they're packaged. Maybe how it's delivered. Maybe how you buy them. Maybe how you pay for them. And there's just so many different aspects of marketing. And maybe there's some special feature about the widget. And why is it that way? And people can't necessarily pick that up from that ad, that online ad, that, you know, however you're advertising, from that first point of awareness, from that first point of discovery, you know, they don't necessarily know the whole story.
Right, definitely. And especially with marketing, I mean, like you said, there's so many different ways. So if they saw a billboard and it happened to be relevant at that moment, you can't tell your whole story. Well, I guess you could on a billboard, but that'd probably be a waste of money.
Well, please don't, because you know, I don't want people driving around me that are spending a lot of time reading a particular billboard.
Right.
But you're right. You're right. You know, there are certain aspects of marketing that are meant to be, I guess, call it on the shallow end. But then, if you want to draw people in deeper, then you need to tell more of your story. You know, there's also the validation part. That's where the V comes in.
Yeah, tell us about that.
Well, and this isn't necessarily, you know, some of these things, all these different bases, it's not like that you have to have a percentage of your marketing on each base, and that percentage is the same for every business. It's, you know, you have to configure this to suit your own business. But V stands for validation. And I like to say it like this. You could call it proof. You could call it logic. You could call it facts. but especially with a high involvement purchase, people, emotion is involved, certainly, but with higher involvement, long cycle purchases, there's more logic and proof required. So that can be a thread that runs through everything you do. Is like, how do we really prove, what kind of facts, how do we provide logic? So if you've created an attraction with discovery and awareness, but sometimes people need to justify that attraction in order to hit the buy button. And right. that's what that V is about. That's what that validation is about.
So what would be an example of a way to get, you know, so you got a newsletter, for mm-hmm. instance. What is a good way to get the validation part of it across?
Well, there are different – thanks for asking about that. There are different angles that you can pursue. You can pursue angles that highlight the needs of an individual. You know, like say, you know, 3 out of 5 people have some kind of gum disease, you know, and this is how it plays out. You know, so you're using facts and figures to highlight their need. You could also do things that highlight your expertise. So for example, if you have some kind of special certification or something of that nature, or if you have some remarkable experience that proves these people really know what they're doing. But it generally involves facts and figures. Let's see here, in the SEO world. So what would be a mark in the SEO world that people can say, oh, well, because he has this certification, he's got to know what he's doing? What would be an example of that?
Well, there really isn't a certification, but I mean, there are other things. I think just the fact that somebody does public speaking on a
yes.
regular basis kind yes. of justifies or shows that they're not afraid to go out and tell other people what they think.
Yeah, so that's kind of a softer side of validation. Maybe a more factual side would be, well, you know, here are some case studies where we helped this business grow 30% in 2 years, or, you know, that would be a good example.
Yeah, those are great. Yeah.
So we've covered the discovery aspect. People got to find out about you from the first time. You have to be relevant. And then there's the awareness. You know, then there's the building and maintaining awareness and telling the rest of your story. Then there's the validation, and then there's engagement. So you've created an attraction, and people, you've been taking steps toward them. So how do you get them to take steps toward you? How do you get them to say, okay, I know about them, but I want to find out more. I want to take a step deeper, and it can be attending a seminar, for example. It could be picking up the phone and calling for a free consultation. It could be saying, well, I'm going to subscribe to their newsletter, or I'm going to subscribe to their YouTube channel. It's really something that gets your prospective customers a little bit deeper in the sales funnel, and they start investing in the relationship. That's what the engagement is all about.
Right, and I'd say most business owners, especially the ones that are shooting from the hip, are assuming that as soon as they do whatever this X piece of marketing is, that they'll get straight to that engagement people, you know, place where people will just pick up the phone and start calling them like crazy.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a good point, Will. And that's probably, I never really thought about it in this way, but that's probably another area of chaos. Is unrealistic expectations. So, we'd love to sit and dream that, well, we put this radio ad out there and we got, you know, tons of calls and those calls became customers right away. And, some of that might happen, but, you do have to, it is a lot of times about nurturing a relationship.
Yeah, it really is. I think it's a big mistake. A lot of business owners assume that no matter what the marketing channel is, that there's going to be an immediate embracing of that channel, and whether that means the phone's going to start ringing or people are going to start walking in the door, you know, or the website traffic's going to spike, you know, without the nurturing part of it, you know, you're not going to get to this part.
Right. And I think it varies from one business to another what a realistic expectation is. But here's a simple thing. Now, this is, you know, after a purchase has been made. But, you know, of course, just because somebody has bought from you doesn't mean that you don't continue to nurture the relationship. But there's a particular car dealer that I like to go to because they give me a free car wash whenever I want. As long as the weather is conducive, as long as their car wash is functional, I can go. I don't have to have an oil change or anything. I just go get my car washed. And so what happens then is it makes it, because my feet are in their store on somewhat of a regular basis, the likelihood of me buying another car from them is a lot greater.
Right. So it only costs them a couple dollar, if a dollar's worth of water, you know, once a week.
Exactly. So, you know, so they're thinking about, well, how can we continue to serve people? How can we nurture relationships so that they will, in this case, buy again?
Right.
So that's an example of engagement.
So that's an example of after a purchase. What about before a purchase?
Before a purchase, it can be some of the things we talked about earlier, like attending a seminar. So somebody says, well, okay, I will attend that seminar. Or here this Google Hangout. Somebody says, I'm going to break out part of my schedule, and I'm going to go and I'm going to attend, or I'm going to watch this Google Hangout, or I'm going to go to this seminar. So it's something that involves them investing themselves in some way.
Yeah, so taking an action.
So there's a call to action, and it can be downloading a white paper. So these things, of course, are in varying degrees of commitment and varying degrees of meaning. But it's somehow making them have skin in the game.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So tell us about the S.
So when I first thought about this Dave's marketing matrix, at first the S was making the sale. I mean, that's what we want, right? That's why we're doing this, so we can make a sale. Pretty quickly, I realized, you know, so I was playing all this out in my head, and I thought, well, wait a minute. If all we're after is making the sale, I think we're short-sighted.
Right. Definitely.
Really what we want is to satisfy customers. It's not just about, okay, you bought my gizmo, I got your money, see you later. Well, what if they walk away and they're not happy? Is that what you want? I don't think so.
Right.
So really the S is for satisfaction. And our objective isn't just to make a sale. I mean, certainly we have sales numbers and all that, but our objective isn't just to make the sale. It's to satisfy our customers to the degree that they buy again and to the degree that they refer others who will buy from us.
Yeah, I think that's huge. I'm reading a book right now called Unselling by Scott Stratton, and he talks about the pulse of any client that you have or any customer that you have. At some point, they're maybe dissatisfied, or they're satisfied, or they're ecstatic, you know. And there's these different levels. And when they get to the ecstatic point, you know, that's when they're satisfied, and that's when they're going to start referring you. You know, people that are just, yeah, you know, I bought it. It was good. It was okay. Those aren't the cheerleaders that you're after.
Right. You know, that's a good point. I remember doing a presentation not long ago. I did a video about this called The Exponential Power of Customer Satisfaction. So if you have, if you have X amount of money that you're investing in marketing, and you get, just say, I'll just pull a number, 500 purchases from that investment. Well, okay, if people buy from you one time, and, okay, so those 500 purchases are worth X amount to you, and you've spent X amount in money in marketing, so that's how much your ROI is in marketing.
Right.
However, if you can satisfy people to the degree that they return to you and buy again, well, then you look at your ROI and it's a lot higher.
Yeah.
You don't have to reach new people. You don't have to develop new markets. You know, you're getting the same people. So then that your ROI is going up. It's on an upward curve. If they then are so satisfied that they refer others, then it takes it to the next level. So your ROI increases wonderfully when people are highly satisfied. So it's not just about making the sale. It's about satisfying people to a high degree and paying attention to their level of satisfaction.
Right.
So that becomes a marketing objective. So that becomes one of the bases you have to cover. And so that's where you're building cross-functional teams with customer service and delivery or whatever aspects of business you have. Those other pieces of your business have to understand that they are part of the marketing. That's part of marketing your product, is taking it to market and satisfying people.
Right, definitely. I heard once that the easiest client to get is the one you already have.
Exactly. Of course, you don't want to, through attrition, you'll lose some. But
sure.
But of course, that's exactly right. If you're satisfying them, then find ways to satisfy them again and again and again.
Yeah. So what you do, Steve, is you help business owners get all of these pieces together in one place, I guess.
That's right. Because they have to harmonize.
Yeah. Well, and where I was leading with that is it possible just to pick out the A and the S and make it, and it'll work?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Well, I'll say this. There are people who can succeed by mistake, and more power to them. I think that's great. However, if you have a choice between being intentional and just being haphazard, my system of belief tells me that being intentional trumps being haphazard all the time.
Absolutely, and I totally agree with it. I think having all of these pieces in the right place and in one place, is well worth it. So, the other thing you mentioned was the business DNA. Do you mind if we talk a little bit about that?
Well, here's what I'd like to do. I don't know if I talked with you about this before. There's another piece to this, Dave's, that I'd like to talk about for a few minutes. And this may be how we end up, if that's okay with you.
That's fine.
What I found is that business owners are not very often armed with very good questions. So they're bombarded with messages about different kinds of marketing that they can buy, marketing services, marketing products, and so they're often just at the mercy of the seller and what the seller knows. And so, does that sound good? Yeah, I guess we'll do that. And my business associate George over here, he's doing it. He seems to like it. So what I've done is I've developed a list of questions. Seven. You can add more, but there are actually eight key questions that I like to encourage people to ask when they're considering different marketing tactics. And if you're game, I can work through those eight questions.
Yeah, let's knock them out. Sounds great.
Okay. Five of them relate to the buying and decision-making process, and then three of them relate more to the implementation part. But so the first question is, who will be our expert advisor?
Okay.
The reason I have that question in there is oftentimes what happens is a small business owner will say, okay, we're gonna do this particular thing. Maybe it's social media, maybe it's brochure, whatever it is, we're going to do this. Well, what happens is that oftentimes they do not execute well. So even if they are doing stuff, they probably shouldn't be doing a lot on their own. But because you got to run your business, you probably have more important things to do. But even if you've delegated to somebody within your organization, it makes a lot of sense to me to be connected on an ongoing basis to somebody who has a lot of expertise in that given area that can provide ongoing guidance. Otherwise, what happens is you're probably not going to execute well.
Right.
So that's the first question is, who will be our expert advisor? And the second question, really, I just mentioned, and the second question is, what does it take to execute well? So, for example, if you think about, there are probably still people who think that, all right, well, SEO, that's, you know, putting keywords at the bottom of our page, and, you know, we do these little things, and that, now we've got SEO. Wow.
It really is just that easy.
And so what happens is that people get turned on to a particular tactic, or they get interested in a particular tactic, and sometimes, depending on who's presenting, they make it sound like it's easy.
Right.
Because they're trying to sell it.
Yeah.
So a lot of times a tactic takes more effort and more determination and maybe more resources than what's advertised, and you really have to ask good questions about, okay, what does it take to execute well? Content marketing, for example. You know, all you got to do is write articles, you know, and the more articles you write, the better off you are. And yeah, that's part of the truth, but who's going to write those articles, and how is that going to get done? And so it sounds easy, and then you get started, and next thing you know, you're scratching your head. I don't know what to write about. You know, phooey. Out here. So that's the next question, is what does it take to execute well? The third one is, what other elements are important? And I can elaborate on this by describing, you know, that there was a series of videos that I did for a client and just got a ton of views. So there's one particular video that I did. It's had about 500,000 views. We've in the total views of all the videos was over 1 million. And it did a great job of directing a lot of traffic, a lot of good, solid traffic to the website. So there were a lot of pages viewed, a lot of time on page. However, good traffic doesn't necessarily automatically become sales.
Right.
So we had that piece of the puzzle, but the other there was another piece of the puzzle that was very important, and that was what? You can tell me.
No, go ahead.
Conversion optimization.
Yeah.
So you can be doing one thing well, but sometimes you need another piece of the puzzle, a complementary piece of the puzzle, if you're going to get the end result that you're looking for. So right. You have to answer that question. What other pieces are important? And then allocate your resources accordingly.
Yeah.
So here's question number four. How will any given tactic fit in the Dave's matrix, or in the overall scheme of things? Is there unnecessary duplication, or are you missing some bases, or can one particular tactic maybe cover more than one base? You have to start thinking about, you know, how are you covering your bases, how are you allocating your resources, and, you know, so how does it fit in the grand scheme of things? Then there's the fifth question, and that is, how much control do I have? I'll tell you what I mean by that. And we can talk about SEO. So you know as well as I do that there have been several companies out there who have been rolling along with different SEO tactics, and then boom, Google changes their algorithm and it goes down the toilet. So there are some tactics. Facebook is an example. So Facebook starts their business pages, and wow, people are liking, people are seeing, we're reaching people, and then Facebook changes their algorithm, and nobody likes me anymore. Nobody's seeing my stuff anymore.
Right.
So there are some marketing tactics that are fluid, and so you have to understand, when you commit to a particular tactic, how stable is it? So, you know, so you may have to allocate your marketing resources in ways that allow you to prepare for instability in a particular tech. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And even further beyond that, some people think that they can just throw some money at SEO, for instance, and get immediate results. You know, and that needs to be understood ahead of time as well, that it's going to take a while and it's going to take some investment before you start moving the needle.
That's a great point, Will, because another question that I don't have listed here, but one that, you know, the list of questions can become so long that it's like, well, how does this become a helpful tool to people? But right. that's one that I have off to the side, and maybe it should be closer to the center, and that's the question, what's our time horizon to success?
Yep.
So then let's see here. Then I've got some other questions, and these relate more to implementation. So one is, who will be responsible for what? Now, it may be that a tactic that you're considering is just purely outsourced. So it's pretty easy to answer the question, who will be responsible for what? However, that doesn't mean that you don't have any responsibility at all as the business owner, because you should be somehow monitoring the results that you're getting. So you do have some level of responsibility no matter what. But if you have members of your staff that are dedicated to certain aspects of marketing, each of them have to know what their roles are, and they have to have the support and the tools they need, the resources that they need to get the job done.
Right.
So this is all part of the planning. And I think you can agree that if execution is not done well, you can't expect good results.
That's 100% true, yeah.
So there's another question that relates to the implementation side, and that is, how will we monitor quality? So many things. So here's an example. So if I decide, okay, I'm going to write content or do social media posts or whatever, you know, people, so on the one hand, let me back up. On the one hand, I think it's great and it's important to develop patterns of activity to reduce costs. So if you can develop something that's repeatable, then you can find people to do it on an ongoing basis and lower your costs. However, you also have to be aware that whenever you have a pattern and you have somebody working a pattern, they can kind of get in a rut and get in a grind and lose their edge or lose quality and just kind of just be stamping it out, you know, week after week. So having a fresh set of eyes on the work with some interval, that becomes an important part of maintaining quality in your efforts.
I agree, and you mentioned earlier about the run of can opener pieces that you did.
Yeah,
you
know, exactly. You know, exactly.
And that extra set of eyes, you know, probably they were losing money by the minute, you know, and that helped stop that,
yes,
stop the bleeding at least.
exactly. And so I remember, that was a long time ago, but I remember some of that stuff so clearly. So that was that question, how do we monitor quality? And then the last question, this might be one of the most important questions to answer, and that is, how will we measure success?
Yeah, that's a good one.
So there are some things, if you think about this whole Dave's matrix, some things are hard to measure in marketing, no question about it. But wherever you can practically measure things, you're better off measuring than not measuring, because you want to be able to make decisions about what's working and what's not working. You know, we have a marketing budget there that's not meant to make you feel good. It's meant to help you accomplish goals. Mm-hmm. So you have to figure out, well, how are these things helping us accomplish our goals? If you're able to identify a component of your marketing efforts that is tangibly contributing to your profits, well, guess what? You want to do more of that. You know,
absolutely.
If you have if you have some of your marketing that is dedicated to stuff that you know by measuring that this isn't doing anything at all, then you maybe have to allocate marketing resources in another direction. There are some things. I was having a conversation with a client recently about our email marketing. And I was like, you know, boy, are we really getting very many results from this? And he made a comment that I thought was very interesting. He said, well, some of the people that we're communicating with through our email marketing, some of them, they're not necessarily yet coming in for business. They're not hitting the buy. They're not ready to hit the buy button yet. However, they do know people, and they are referring people who are coming in and hitting the buy button. So it's not just about looking at numbers. It's also understanding nuances and the interplay between different aspects and wherever you can put your finger on the pulse of what's happening and why people are coming to you, you're in better shape when you measure things.
Yeah, that's a great point there. That you even though maybe they haven't hit the buy button, that they're still sending other people that are further along that cycle.
That's right. That's right.
And it kind of goes back to the awareness thing you were talking about earlier, because you were consistently in front of them, you know, that they even thought of referring you in the first place.
Exactly. That's exactly right. If the person might not even be looking for a referral. They might be saying, well, you know, I had this problem, or this is something that's going on, and they say, oh, I just read something about that the other day. Got this email, and they were talking about this, and call these guys. I think they can help you.
Yeah, yeah.
So it may not even be as blatant as, I'm looking for a referral, who knows somebody who can do X. It may happen in an entirely different way. And that's where things get fuzzy and hard to measure. But because you're covering that base of awareness,
right,
there are things happening that you didn't even necessarily intend to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Steve, this has been a ton of great information. What is the best way for someone to get a hold of you to maybe just start talking about the Dave's process or speak with you about it?
Two things. They can call me if they want. Phone number 636-699-8772. It's on my website, which leads me to point number two. Go to my website, 2qsolutions.net, and you could reach out to me by email, srsmart@2qsolutions.net, or, you know, through my website, of course. And you know, I'd be happy to have a conversation. The work that I typically do starts with a very non-threatening conversation. I don't like sales processes that are hard and in your face. I don't like people doing that to me, so I don't do that to other people.
That's
but
awesome.
Generally, the work that I do starts with a few very simple conversations.
That's terrific. I mean, it's a lot easier to help people when they know you're not threatening them.
Well, and honestly, I don't come to the table assuming that I can help them or that I am the guy to help them. I want to understand first. I want to understand what they want to accomplish with their business and really look at it. Can I help them? And if I did, what would that look like? And, you know, so that's pretty non-threatening.
Yeah. Well, Steve, I really appreciate you jumping on the broadcast today. And man, you've dropped down some great pieces of information for us.
Will, what a pleasure, as always, not just to talk with you, but to be, you know, part of your tribe is a great privilege.
I appreciate it. My name again is Will Hanke. This is the Navigate the Rapids broadcast. Thanks a lot for joining us today, and we'll see you next week.